Last week, if you, and I know you were all, you who are here tonight, were here last week, so I don't need to go back over that, but we did look quite extensively at a scripture, 2 Corinthians 2 and 11, where Paul was talking about, we talked a lot about forgiveness, in order that Paul says, no advantage would be taken of us by Satan, for we are not ignorant of his schemes. So what we were doing, we're going through the different names, Satan's names, that help reveal his tactics. Now, we have already done 1 Thessalonians 2 and 18, where we talked about the adversary. Do you remember Paul? He says, for we wanted to come to you. Certainly I, Paul, did again and again, but the adversary Satan blocked our way. And we talked a lot about our adversary in relation to the life of Job and how he really did wage war against Job. So then this brings us on to a new name. And it's found in 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8. 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 8. And this is what it says. Be alert and of sober mind. Your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. Okay, now, the word devil there, if you look it up in the Greek, it is false accuser. False accuser. And the word devour in the Greek, it means to drown or to swallow up. Now, we know that slandering people is not a good thing, don't we? But the enemy, he will slander us. But what he would also try to do is to get you and me to slander other people. That is one of his tactics. He is, if you like, the master slanderer. Okay? The one who makes the accusations we talked about. But what he tries to do, he tries to get us as God's people to buy into this, to slander one another. Now, I don't know if you've ever been slandered. I don't know if you've ever been at the sharp end of that, where someone has defamed your name, where someone has made an insinuation or an accusation against you, and then someone maybe has confronted you. But I have experienced this as a pastor. I have to tell you that. I'm not going into details, like. But people have slandered my name. And when I found out, I couldn't believe it. Because of who they were. Who had told lies about me and slandered my name. And the truth is this. We may never know who slanders your name behind our backs. Because it's not where slander takes place. Very seldom will someone slander you to your face. Very seldom, if ever, will someone slander you to your face. They only slander you when you're not there. Another word for that is backbiting. Okay? Well, does the scripture say anything about that? Or does it just sort of let that sort of stuff, does it sort of pass over it? Or does scripture speak about those things? Can you think of anything? Now, I'm not asking you to give me a specific verse, because that would be a bit hard maybe. Go for it, Brian. What does it say?
I get what it says, Jim, about...
Well, we'll look it up.
It's Timothy 1.
Timothy...
5, verse 13.
Right, well, give us the gist of it.
It says 10 things that you ought not to say.
Yeah. I have other ones here, too. First Timothy 5 and what, Brian?
Verse 13.
Verse 13. Right, here we go. Besides, they get into the habit of being idle and going about from house to house, and not only do they become idlers, but also gossips and busybodies. saying things that, exactly, same thing, Brian, well done, saying things they ought not to. Here's some other ones for you. Very good, Brian. Someone like to look up Psalm 35 and verse 15. You look at an up Psalm, Dorothy. 1 Peter chapter 2 and 1. Brian.
Psalm
35, verse 15.
Right,
okay. Dorothy, 1 Peter 2 and 1. Brian. Uh-huh. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 1. And Brian, if you can find Colossians chapter 3, verse 8. And there's one there I'll find. Just take your time and find them. Okay, Psalm. What does it say?
But when I stumbled, they gathered me thee. A tiger gathered against me. When I was unaware, they slumbered me without ceasing.
Right. So David knew all about slander. Imagine, they slandered him without ceasing. That's relentless. To be slandered without ceasing is not good. Okay, so David knew what that was in his experience, right? Dorothy?
Therefore, let men say, O malice, all deceit, hypocrisy, envy, and all evil speaking.
Right, evil speaking there in the NIV and other translations is translated slander. Evil speaking, slander is the same. You see the connection? Evil speaking and slander. Different versions have different. Brian, you're Colossians 3 and verse 8. Right, yes, but before you get to it there, whenever you started to read that, it said, rid yourselves. Didn't it?
It said, therefore.
Yeah.
Leaving aside all malice.
Right, so leaving aside is putting it behind you. And some other translations, what it says is, rid yourselves. Or get rid of it, don't do it. That's what it's saying, okay? It's worded slightly different, but it's the same meaning.
Yeah.
Right, Brian, you go for it's Colossians 3 and 8. Go ahead.
But now yourselves are to put off all the anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthiness, language out of your mouth.
Right, so is that the King James?
Yes.
Yeah, it puts it filthy language out of your mouth. That's the way it puts it.
Yeah.
But it's put away or get rid of.
Yeah.
Okay? So in other words, it has to not have any part in your life or my life. Okay? Now, here's another one. I'll read it out. And it's Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 31, I think. Yeah, all right? So Ephesians chapter 4, verse 31. Get rid of all bitterness, rage, and anger, brawling, and slander, along with every form of malice. So in other words, for the Christian, for the believer, slander is not to be part of our vocabulary. It's not to be part of who we are or what we do. Because it is wicked. And we know it's wicked because the devil, that's one of his titles, the slanderer. Okay? And it's interesting that word devour there about your enemy, the devil. Well, we know he is our enemy by now. False accuser, slanderer. He prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. And as I said, the word devour in Greek is to drown or swallow up. In other words, to overwhelm. To overwhelm you. Now, if people are talking behind your back and you find out about it, how does it make you feel?
Terrible.
If a lot of people, if that's one person, but say like in David's case, there was a lot slandering you, where does that take you to? I think that takes you to despair, where you think everybody is against you. Everybody has heard a story. What's the old saying? Two sides to every story, yeah? Here's the problem with that. A lot of people don't want to hear both sides. Sometimes you've been told stories and I've been told stories. And the truth is this, we've only heard one side of the story. We've never heard the other side. So what do we normally do? We go with the side that we've heard. We tend to believe that. Even though we don't know from the other part, is this true?
The Lord said we'd be headed for his name's sake.
Said what?
The Lord said we'd be headed for his name's sake.
We'll be?
Hated.
Oh, I hated?
Yes.
Yes. Well, did they slander Jesus? Yes, they did. On one occasion, we'll get to it later on. Don't know if we'll get it tonight. We might. He was labelled something unbelievable. What did the, can you remember? This was unbelievable what they named him. Can you think of what it was? It was, well, we're going to give you a clue. The Pharisees called him it. And it was a deep insult. Okay? They called him, well, I've it down here for later on, but we'll do it now. Beelzebub. They called Jesus, the Son of God, Beelzebub. Now, let's just deviate for a wee minute, because we've got to that. This is further on down. In Matthew chapter 12, verse 24, this is what it reads. Now, when the Pharisees heard it, they said, this fellow, when he had just cast out a demon, right? The Pharisees, they said, and this is a slander of the highest order, right? They said, this fellow does not cast out demons except by Beelzebub. Okay? So Beelzebub can be translated Lord of the Flies, chief ruler of the demons, the dung god, or the prince of devils. That's what the King James Version says, the prince of devils. The Pharisees accused Jesus of being the prince of devils. But he wasn't. What was he? He was a prince, okay. He was the prince of light. He was the prince of heaven, prince of God. So you see how the enemy can twist people's minds into making accusations, even against Jesus, that was totally false. Even the Pharisees, the Sadducees, all of those religious leaders, they lied about Jesus. They made up false allegations. They said he was a conspirator. They said he was plotting against Rome. They made all this up. That's slander. That's slander. But the devil was behind it. He was getting these people to push that agenda, to promote it. And as you know and I know, they believed it. They believed it and they crucified him. So what the enemy does when he's slandering us and he's making false accusations, he's trying to, if you think of the analogy, to drown us, to overwhelm us. So where you get to the point, have you ever been wading out into the sea and all of a sudden this wave out of nowhere hits you and you get a mouthful of salt water and you're gulping and then you're just got your breath and the next thing another wave hits you and the second one's a lot worse than the first one because you're still trying to recover from that, and then if you get hit with a third one you could be in trouble. And that's the way the enemy works, folks. He will come in waves of he's relentless. Have you ever seen a lion hunt? They're relentless. Funny enough, I was watching a wee documentary earlier on, and this lion, he got hold of a wildebeest. But the wildebeest will come, was a young wildebeest. The mothers or the fathers will come, the herd, and protect. And that lion, they killed it. But what actually got the lion killed? If he had run away, if he had retreated, he would have lived. But they got him on the, you could see him throwing him up into the air like a piece of paper. And then when he was lying on the ground mortally wounded, they finished him off. They tramped him, they gored him, and he died. But it was his relentless pursuit of that that got him killed. If he would have went, you know what, now it's time to back off. I'll live to fight another day. The enemy won't back down. Now, he has to back down whenever God comes into the situation. He has to back down in that, but he is relentless. There's no doubt about it. He's prowling around seeking for someone to devour, and that's every day. Every moment of every day. The devil, I don't believe, slumbers or sleeps. We know God doesn't. I don't believe Satan does either, nor his demons or his fallen angels. They're very, very busy. All you got to do is look at our world and see what's going on round about us. So that's one of his titles then, the slanderer. So that brings us on to Isaiah chapter 14. This is another. And this name, whenever you hear this name, you automatically sort of cringe. So it's in Isaiah chapter 14, verse 12. And this is what it reads. I'll wait, you can either look it up or just I'll read it out to you. It's up to yourself. Isaiah 14 and 12. And this is what it says. How you are fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning. How you are cut down to the ground, you who weakened the nations. O Lucifer, son of the morning. When you look that up in the Hebrew, do you know what it means? Brightness, morning star. Brightness, morning star. Now, when you and I hear the word Lucifer, unless we know what that title actually means, we automatically think the opposite. It's dark, it's wicked. It wasn't in the beginning. Not before he fell from, if you like, grace in heaven and wanted to take usurp power over God. But literally the name Lucifer, it means brightness or morning star or son of the morning. Now, that's interesting, because Paul, I believe, obviously knew this scripture, okay? And in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verses 13, I think, to 15, I'm not going to read the whole verse, but this is what Paul said. Satan himself masquerades as an angel of what? Light, right? Satan himself masquerades as an angel of light. Now here's the thing. That was once his identity. That was once his identity. At one time in heaven, he was an angel of light. It is reckoned he was the brightest, the son of the morning, the brightest angel or star, whatever way you want to look at it, in heaven. So do you think he finds it difficult to masquerade as an angel of light? No, he doesn't, because that's who he once was until he had was cast down from heaven. Now, which do you think we would find more difficult to deal with as an analogy? A roaring lion, as Peter describes, and that's the analogy he used, a roaring lion seeking to devour someone, or the way Paul describes him, an angel of light. Which would be the hardest to face, do you think? The roaring lion or the angel of light? The angel of light. You see, when a roaring lion, that's the analogy, right, Peter uses. A roaring lion, you do not mistake a roaring lion coming to get you. If there's a lion running at you and he's roaring, he's coming to get you. He's looking dinner. Okay? So that's easily identified. Where's the danger associated with an angel of light? There is none. There's nothing to put your eye on our guard. To warn us. Go, whoa, whoa, whoa. Here's this angel of light coming. But we could go, whoa, whoa, whoa. Here's this roaring lion coming to devour me, spiritually speaking. So the angel of light, when he comes in this guise, this masquerade, which is hard to identify. See, that's the problem. When he comes as the angel of light, he's not easily identified. In other words, he could have his dirty deeds done, the work done on us that he's trying to do, before we even know it. You see what I mean? Because he has come in a guise that it doesn't threaten us. It doesn't send off any alarm or any alert within us to go, hold on a minute, I could be in trouble here. But when the roaring lion comes, you hear it. And you know, I need to take action. I need to defend myself. I need to do something to get out of here. Not so with the angel of light, folks. He masquerades. He comes in a way subtle, like he did in the Garden of Eden. Eve did not find the serpent threatening in any way, did she? You don't read there that when the serpent came to her, she took to her heels and ran out of the road. No. She engaged with the serpent, the devil. And we read then, as I said last week, that word, this is her word, he beguiled me. He fooled me. He took me in. Now, I have stories that I've heard, and I'm sure you have too, of people who have been taken in. What about these charlatans who go round intentionally preying on old people and rip them off in their life savings? Would you say they come as a roaring lion or an angel of light? An angel of light. Yeah. They come and they winkle their way in. They'll find out. You know what they do? They'll look up newspapers and they'll see who's died recently. And they'll go survived by his wife or her husband. Do you know what I mean? And what they'll do is they'll wait a while and then they'll target them for some scam. And they've done it. You've seen it on TV, the different programs where people take up their cause. And they've been ripped off by builders, by insurance people. I'm not saying all insurance people or builders are bad, but people have been scammed, cheated out of their life savings. And I mean, we know the devastation that leaves upon them. And that's the way the devil comes. He prowls. A lion will always seek out the weakest in the herd. A lion will lie in the long grass and observe who's weak, who's limping, who's the youngest in there, who can't run fast. He assesses all that, and our enemy, the devil, he does that too. He knows when we're weak. Like, I mean, would you say if you lost someone near and dear to you, would you say that you would be at a weak point in your life? Yes. If you were suffering from an acute illness or a chronic illness, would you say you're at a weak point in your life? Yes. If for some reason financially you became bankrupt or in a very precarious situation, do you think the devil is just going to sit back and not use that opportunity? There's a phrase, I heard this actually the other day. Someone in politics in America, he said this, and it was concerning the pandemic, and it was disgusting. He said, never waste a good crisis. Think about that. Never waste a good crisis. What did he mean by that? Manipulate it. Take advantage of the crisis. That's what the devil does. He'll take advantage of every crisis in your life and my life. He'll take advantage of every weakness in your life and my life. And he's at his, I think, most dangerous when he comes, masquerades as the angel of light. Or maybe someone comes alongside you and it appears as if they're there to help you. Okay? But they have an ulterior motive. Have you ever come across that? Someone who pretends to be something that they're not. Someone who's maybe in it for what they can get out of you. They're not really in it to help you. They'll come alongside you to manipulate you, to fleece you. I remember a man, it's a true story, telling me one time, and he was irate. He says to me, Jim, have an uncle or had an uncle, he had passed away, and I would have went and cut the grass for him and cut the hedges and done this and done that for him. And nobody else in the family did anything for him. And I says, well, fair play to you for doing that for that man if he wasn't able to do it. Aye, but I got no thanks for it. I went, what do you mean? He got no thanks for it. What do you hear? He left me nothing in his will. What was he doing it for? For himself. Thought, if I help this old fella, when he dies, I'll be in there. Well, the old fella was a lot smarter than what he was, and he saw through him. Problem is, folks, sometimes we don't see through the angel of light, and we buy into it. We think it's good. I could tell you horror stories about vulnerable people who someone came alongside them, and the person who came alongside them, they had an agenda. And whenever they found out that their agenda was not going to be realised, what did they do? They started to slander that person. This is fact. They started to slander that person because their agenda, they realised at some point it wasn't going to transpire. They weren't going to get what they wanted. And that's what happens sometimes, folks, when people slander you. If they're pleased with how you treat them, if things are going the way they want it to go in a relationship with you, they're your friend. But you see, if you don't give them what they want, very quickly they're not your friend. What do they become? Your enemy. 100% right. They become your enemy. And we know beyond a shadow of a doubt that Satan, the devil, Beelzebub, whatever names we're going to be going through here, adversary, he is 100% our enemy. But just realise, he doesn't always come as the roaring lion. He comes as that insidious angel of light where we're taken by surprise. And I mean, it's awful when you're in that position and then you go, how could I have been so foolish? How could I have been so foolish? Like, I mean, I wonder, we'll finish there, like, but I just wonder, whenever David, King David, reflected on what happened between him and Bathsheba, who do you think was really inspiring that move? The devil. You see, because the devil knew that David was a man after God's own heart. That's what scripture says, describes him. A man after God's own heart. So do you think the devil's going to leave him alone? No. The anointed of God. Is the devil just going to go, oh, well, God has anointed him now to be king. I'll just back off. No, he didn't. And in fact, you'll read on through, I think it's 2 Samuel, where you'll read a story there where the devil, it says, incited David to count his fighting men. Do you know that story? Where Boaz, his captain of the army, says, don't do it. Why would you want to count your fighting men? Sure, you know that God has always been on your side, and when God's fighting for you, you can't lose. But it says that Satan incited him to count his fighting men. And it didn't work out too good. It didn't. But on that occasion, it says when kings go to war, David should have been with his armies on the battlefield. That's what it says. When kings go to war, where was David? In the palace. On the roof. And just at that moment, who's on the roof in the other building opposite him? Bathsheba, a naked woman bathing. And then you can see what happened from there on in. The lust of the flesh took over. So, you know, Satan is always looking for an opportunity, folks. And as long as we're aware of that, and as long as we're careful, and as what Peter and Paul says, to be sober-minded, to be vigilant, watch out. You know the old saying, if it seems too good to be true, be wary. So whenever things come your way and my way, and we think sometimes, you know what, that nearly seems too good to be true, just slow down, pause and go, what's behind this? Who's behind this? And you'll be surprised sometimes who's behind it. Right, we'll finish there tonight, folks. And next week, we're in lockdown.